So today will today I'll be silent, and I will request you all to speak. Today is a review session where people will try to answer some of the questions that have been covered in this text. So I won't be speaking today, and then we will have guided meditation afterwards. So before we answer these five questions, which we have covered in the 11 verses so far, I'd like to ask, does anybody know the meaning of the title of this book, Manashodhanam? What does it mean? Yes? Purification of the mind. And so what is mind? Let me ask you that.
What is mind? That's the seat of our emotions. That's where we do all our processing.
Yeah. Yeah, mind is not here. When they talk about mind, it's not only the seat of emotions, but also the intellect, the seat of thoughts and judgment. So in this text, when we talk of mind, we talk about emotions. But here it is the entire thinking apparatus that you said that judges it. How has the mind been described? What does it, we have talked many times that what does it equate to? Maybe somebody else. What is a mind is what?
Flow of thoughts.
Yeah, flow of thoughts, right. So you want to expound a little on that?
Like it's an example of you, I remember you always say of the river that water is flowing. And so our mind is the thoughts are flowing, coming and going all the time.
Right. Also an extension, anybody wants to add to that? Yeah.
Emotions?
Yeah, the emotions. Mm-hmm. But emotions, thoughts, concepts, they are all flowing. So when the water is flowing, we call it a river. When the water is stationary, we call it a pond or a lake or a swimming pool. Only when the water is flowing, it's a river. So only when thoughts are moving, we say the mind is present. So the mind is there only when there is a constant flow of thoughts. And if you will see when you analyze or you watch your mind, there is a constant, there are breaks. This one thought, it jumps to another thought and another thought. And simultaneously, you cannot have two thoughts in your mind at the same time. There is only one thought. You may think I'm getting multiple thoughts and I'm stressed out. But actually, there is only one thought, but it is very rapidly moving from thought to thought. So the goal of meditation or the purpose of meditation is to dam, just as we stop the flow of the river, and then you can channel the energy of the river to supply, electricity or to irrigate the farms or benefit the people. So similarly, this mind which is running and causes so much stress in us, so many problems in us, when that mind's energy is stopped through meditation, through the control of the mind, through then that quiet mind, which is now under my control and is silent, is now able to accomplish great deeds. I can become very creative. If you look at a creative writer, or a poet, or a great scientist, when do they do their best thinking? When their mind is peaceful, early in the morning. But if they're fighting with their wife, or they've, had some stress with their children, or their financial problem, it's usually difficult to come up with very creative things. Even in spirituality, if your mind is very stressed, you may run to God and say, God, save me. But if you really want to evolve, whether it's in the material field, whether you want to be a success in the, you need to have silence of the mind. So quietening the mind is necessary. So that is why we said you dam the river and then you can use that energy for benefit. So similarly, when you quieten the mind and you make it more peaceful and less of a flow, then that mind can be then channeled to do either creative work or spiritual work or even just get inner joy. So what is purification, Shodhanam? Maybe I can start from there.
Well, I'm still learning, so I'm picking up from everybody else who's here. So.
Right.
Now, isn't it where to cleanse your mind, does that be where it's almost perfectly clean? I mean, is that what you're trying to, more or less?
Right.
To have a perfectly clean and healthy mind?
Right. So,
as far as spiritually, you have to have it, you know, like you were just saying now. In other words, not having a negative impact in your mind.
True. True. That's one aspect. Anything else about purification? Right.
And knowing yourself.
True, right. So on the one hand, getting rid of the negative thoughts, jealousy, anger, greed, and on the other hand, substituting them with positive thoughts and ultimately going inward towards the spiritual journey. So now we have understood the book, the title of the book, that it is Purification of the Mind. And then we'll talk about the dirt of the mind a little later, but let us come to the first question. So it says that, are you convinced that a pure mind or heart is necessary for joyful living? One, whether you are or not, I'm sure everybody will say yes. But we should say why. Why do you think a pure mind or heart is necessary for joyful living? And then give an example. Are you convinced that a pure mind or pure heart is necessary for joyful living? Right. So I think you have answered the question in the negative, that not having a calm or a pure mind will not lead to joyful living. But maybe in the positive way, Stafford, what do you think?
It's mysterious that I should feel kind of quite joy thinking about a word, thinking about a concept like that. But I'm just a very word-oriented sort of a person. It works for me.
Mm-hmm. Also, I was reading just yesterday, we were doing the 17th chapter, and Swami Chinmayananda says, not only a word, but even remembering the name of God, but remembering it with feeling. Otherwise, you know, we walk around and just say, you know, Ram Ram, you know, when we meet somebody, or we say Jai Shri Krishna, or Hari Om, but we say it mechanically from the mouth, or sometimes you say, oh Jesus, you know, I'm so upset, or oh God, or oh my God. But that is said without any, just from the throat. But when you use the name of Jesus, or when you use, that's what they say, do not use the God's name in vain. What they don't mean, they don't say that don't remember him. But when you remember the name of God, it should be from your heart. When you say Hari Om, then you should, you know that Hari Om is God's name. Or when you say Jesus or God, or, you should visualize in your mind God's form or God's qualities or God's love and compassion. So that also changes the climate of the mind. The moment you remember his name, it can be any name, it can be any form, it can be any, even it can be the formless substratum of the universe, the support, the Brahman, the consciousness. But in whatever way you remember God with love and with attention, not just mechanically, you know, saying that, the moment you, so if one is speaking from the throat and one is speaking from the heart. But speaking from the heart instantly changes. So that is another example where, right, right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Exactly. That's exactly what you're talking about. Those qualities, yeah, you know, Advaishta Sarva Bhutanam, the one who is compassionate, does not hate anybody and so on. Right. Yeah, go ahead.
I started counting my blessings, very grateful, gratitude. And to me, it's like I'm cleaning the mirror. And my mirror was dirty before, and now my mirror is nice.
We can go to the, yeah.
Just as Vasanas block the light or cloud the light, positive emotions intensify the light or make it brighter. Just for every action, there's a reaction. So I think that's pretty clear to me.
Go to the next question. Diana can answer. What is the difference between impurities and distractions of the mind?
Why me?
Or you can ask your friend for help. Oh. Joyce.
Well, impurities are more, I think they're the negative tendencies, and distractions can be anything. They could be in love with your cat and focus all of your attention on your cat rather than focusing inward. So that's sort of a very basic definition of that.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Anything else? Yeah. What is the difference between impurities and distractions of the mind?
Impurities, it's like having to be more stronger. It connotates something a little stronger, like emotions, like anger and hatred.
Right. I think that's a good point. That's what I was thinking, being busy-minded, especially when we sit for meditation. There are two kinds of obstacles that come in our spiritual journey. And one is the negative tendencies, you know, anger, hatred and all. If you are upset with somebody or you're angry or somebody has hurt you or, you know, you're depressed or you are sorrowful or you are unhappy. But you may have none of those. You know, your life may be going fine. It's not so bad. Everything is reasonably good. But still, your mind is racing. And that is the problem with the modern living. That is one of the, they call it problems of the first world. You know, in the third world, it's a problem of home and how to get my cloth and my next meal and my next. But here, you know, it's my iPhone is not working, you know. My i4 is too old. I need an i5. You know, things like that. And that's, I myself say that. I'm already saying my 4S is too slow. I mean, that's kind of things, you know, because where we drive and talk on the phone or when we are eating, we are watching TV and then we are, you know, checking the news on the internet. And so I think when you overstress your mind throughout the day, that's why Eknath Ishwaran, in the handout we give at the beginning of for the first time, he says that be single-pointed, do one thing at a time as much as possible. If you're eating, then you should be eating. If you're driving, you should be driving. If you're talking to somebody, your full attention should be on listening to that person, not preparing my response. See, a lot of times when a person is speaking, rather than listening, I am already, so then I don't pay attention to. So consciously slowing down the mind, taking out time to just do nothing. So that will reduce the distractions of the mind, because the distractions of the mind come from overactive mind, overexerted mind. So I think that, I think you kind of covered the points very well, both of you. Good job. Maybe next question, what is attachment and how is it an obstacle in the path of spiritual journey? Okay. We can go slowly. You can first maybe cover what is attachment.
Attachment is, it's sort of like that's kind of the beginning of a lot of the not impure mind, the impurities are attached to things that, you know, your senses bring in different things, and then you begin having a conditioned mind where you judge, and this is good, this is bad, and you're attached to something, and then you attach to it, and you get things greed, anger when you attach to something that doesn't happen where you want it to, and you know, bad thoughts, bad feelings, and then bad actions.
Yeah. What is attachment? Can you tell me back, doctor? What do you think is the definition for attachment? Yeah, I think I think some of you hit it very well. Attachment is a dependence. Swami Chinmayananda calls it I plus I want. That without that particular, I mean, you want to say something?
I was going to say that for me, attachment is a false promise of hope for peace, mm-hmm. where love is peace. People seem to attach themselves to something so they can be calm, peaceful, and happy.
Right.
It's a false promise. It never works out that way. You're always left feeling bad or feeling empty. Where love, on the other hand, is peace.
Is fulfilling that. Right. Well, that's very good. Yeah, thank you. True. So I think, as all of you have said, it's I plus I want. If that means I depend on that particular object to make me complete, to make me happy. I love my children. You know, that is good. But then if I depend for my happiness upon them, then that is attachment. That if my child leaves, I get unhappy. Or the child doesn't call me when they go to college, I get unhappy. Or child doesn't listen to me. Or child, So same way, you know, spouse, you love your spouse, but when you depend, Swami Chinmayananda often used to say, do not put the key of your happiness in somebody else's pocket. Whether it's your spouse or your child or your job or your money or your house or your dog or your cat or your pet rock. You know, people depend for their happiness on so many things. So the moment you do that, then that is attachment. That I, minus that object, I am nothing, and plus that object, I am everything. The moment you do that, and it could be a person, then you are becoming dependent, as he said, the dependence on that. And that, so that is why attachment can be an obstacle in spiritual journey, because part of the spiritual evolution is to give up attachment to objects, emotions, and thoughts. It does not mean you don't love them, but you do not depend on them for your happiness. We'll talk about that a little bit more in self-knowledge. But that happiness, the source of happiness is within. I am happiness because I am that spiritual being. And so the source of happiness is within me because everything is that consciousness, that life, that God's presence. And so you slowly in the spiritual journey, you detach from the worldly objects. Again, does not mean you don't love. In fact, a spiritual person loves all. In fact, has more love. But does not depend for their happiness on any person. And somebody didn't smile at me or somebody didn't talk to me. And then more and more depends on the Lord's presence. So it becomes self-sufficient. Either you, if he's an emotional person, he says, I depend on God. And he thinks of God as Jesus or Krishna or Buddha or Shiva, which is fine, you know. Or he realizes that the joy is within me. In either case, when he puts his happiness on a higher being, then automatically the dependence and attachment on the worldly objects gets less. And then only one can progress spiritually. Spiritual progress is impossible if a person does not reduce their attachment, does not reduce their dependence on things. And like I said, it could be cigarettes, it could be, you know, anything. It could be work. You know, some people are so attached to their work, so attached to their money, their position, their power. So I think all of those are an obstacle to in the spiritual journey. So maybe can we identify somebody, Mary, identify one such obstacle from your life, or maybe all of us, maybe think yourself that what am I attached to, or what am I dependent on, that is an obstacle on my spiritual journey. And maybe we should decide that from today onwards, I'll attempt to remove it. And if you want to say it aloud or if you want to think about it. No, that's good. That's what it's, in fact, the question is sadhana. That is the spiritual practice. Sadhana means spiritual practice. Through introspection, identify one such obstacle from your life. So maybe each one of us should take a moment and see what is it that I am attached to, that I am dependent on, where I spend a lot of my mental energy on thinking, planning, wanting, acquiring, and all. And maybe how can I remove that attachment or at least reduce it so that I may progress spiritually.
But it is kind of embarrassing and it's unworthy of me, but nevertheless, it is. And I'm sure we all feel that for one reason or another. And as a professor, I've never had much money. I've got five kids and
yeah, it can be even something very small, like I got addicted to playing fantasy football, you know, it's because I had just got a new phone. I had got a new phone, and then my son got me addicted to it. And then every morning checking my team and, you know, trying to do trades and, you know, and I would wake up in the, and it was terrible, you know, it, and, you know, so I mean, just something, but I mean, of course, I have a lot more attachments than those, but I'm just giving an example of where because it was I had a new phone, I had this first time I had played it, and, you know, and so I mean, that's, you know, that's all you're thinking of. It's very funny how even a small thing like that can just take over your mind. Yeah. I mean, of course, stock market is a big thing, but you're right. It can be anything like that.
Mine is what? Indian
soap operas.
I'm doing prayer, and guess what comes in my mind? And I can keep myself.
Obsessed with it, that it becomes like the major thing, because it isn't. I've seen a lot of people that are really happy that have almost nothing.
True. Thank you. The next question is important, so let us spend little time. Why so much emphasis on firm abidance in self-knowledge? Isn't just listening to spiritual talks enough? You know, if you just go listen. Why? Yes.
It's because after we listen, we go, that was really great. And then we go home and it kind of fades away. And so if you don't think about it afterwards, which the questions were good.
So what do you mean by abidance, firm abidance in self-knowledge?
And actually you thinking about after you get home, thinking about what was taught and how that applies to my life and how it makes my life better, or what things I'm working on, where you actually think about it afterwards.
Right.
Firmly abide in it.
Anybody else? That's very good, yeah.
So one of the biggest problems is getting success in business is failure, FTI, failure to implement. And it's the same principle applied to listening and not actually putting it into action.
Action.
So it doesn't do any good to listen if you don't use it. And abidance in self-knowledge means you not only listen to the talk, but you walk the walk out of that knowledge.
You practice that. In the back, anything you would like to tell us about abidance in self-knowledge, or what is self-knowledge? And how do you abide in it? Looking for a definition first.
I agree with what he said, but I can't really put a definition to it.
Anybody else? What is self-knowledge, first of all? Diana should know this one.
I think it's knowing yourself and the way you should live and how you fail and how you succeed. Mm-hmm. And I think listening to talks is helpful, but I don't think it's an automatic, all of a sudden, I get it, and I live that way the rest of my life, because there's such a body of experience up to this point that I think it's almost subtle. I mean, I find changes subtly happening in my life. It wasn't just an automatic, just I heard you talk, and now I'm living a different lifestyle. It's over time.
What is self-knowledge? I mean, yes.
Knowledge of the self. One of the terms they use, like, the Lord of love dwells within the lotus of the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And being aware of that self that dwells within us. And when you're aware of that, and you add to that the knowledge that we do and how we should live our lives, and then we take that a step farther and we actually change some things about our life.
Mm-hmm.
That's where abidance kicks in, because when you actually take that knowledge and demonstrate it in your life, use it, and then you get the benefits, then you get the peace and the joy and the love and the compassion and all this fruits of the spirit.
Mm-hmm. And we're also talking about the big S self, not the little S self.
Right.
But being on the bigger self.
How about, would you like to add something?
Bill?
Yeah, Bill.
My mind is like, self-knowledge, know your faults. A lot of times, with me, I'll see people on a page in a certain way, you don't know what's wrong. And usually, I find out my feelings wrong. And it's crazy, is this?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Two new people in the back. Now, you also, I'll ask you next what I was going to talk about. Jigisha, Dinesh, anything you want to add about what is self-knowledge and abidance and impurity?
Yes, self-knowledge is knowing your true self, and your true self is such as an unknown. But you have so much dust on your true self. that is some of that is because the burden of the demand of our life. You know, we have to get up in the morning, we have to go to work, we have to, and we have to do this with dedication. And in that dedication, we have to keep our success. We have a passion, we have a passion. We don't have to go. So we do this full force, like the Aspect Unity, but we be detached from the climate. And that is the hardest part. And so, in order to do a detached attachment, you have to be attached to yourself, the true self.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is where I think, and that's all I want to put from this class, the meditation.
Right.
Right.
Dinesh, you want to add anything to that? Said like a true husband. What you want to add to that?
I think over the past few weeks coming, when you look at yourself introspectively and you recognize the vasana that you have inside of yourself, it may be quite ugly, and you go, oh gosh. But I think part of the journey getting to a pure mind is recognizing the parts inside of you that you need to work on. And so that's been helpful for me, even though I haven't especially liked some of the things that I've realized. You have to get there before you can get to.
Right. That's what they say in meditation. Some of your old tendencies come up to the surface, and that's why you may encounter them, and that's very good. You know, rather than being afraid of them, let them go. But just to summarize what everybody has said and what the essence of this question, what the teacher is asking, what he's saying is that there are three steps to spiritual knowledge. One is listening. You know, listening is not enough. Listening is good. And listening could be in this, like a class or reading a book or watching a video or a DVD. And then you contemplate upon it. I think somebody said that you listen and then you contemplate and then you think about it. And so that is the second, that is this really true? Even though the teacher has said it or the book say it, is that really true? Is that really applicable to me? Is it really even useful? Because sometimes you may go to some lectures or some classes where it doesn't fit with what you are, you know. And so you say, okay, it may be good for maybe 20 other people who are enjoying it, but you don't feel so. You have to think about it and then say that, is it applicable to me? Is it even correct? Even if the Lord has said it, or even if Jesus has said it, or Krishna has said it. But do I believe in it? Is it my knowledge? Is it my belief? So second is, first you listen, then you contemplate upon it and think that why this knowledge is useful to me. And then the third, as Tom said, is abide in that knowledge. You apply that. And in meditation, what we say is that you think about it, you listen to what is meditation, then you contemplate upon why meditation will help, and then you sit down and meditate. As far as the self is concerned, what do they mean by abidance in self-knowledge? Is, as I think she said, that I am that infinite reality. Actually, all of us are nothing but that one Om, a one consciousness, appearing in different forms, having different names, different body, different. But in reality, every cell of our body is that self, that consciousness. You can call it Brahman, you can call it Father in heaven, you can call it Allah, you can call it, you know, the total consciousness, or call it Jesus or Krishna. But actually, there is only one. And constantly reminding yourself, not as a mechanical, not like, you know, some people say, soham, I am that, what she says, you know, soham. You don't mechanically say, soham, soham, soham. No, it's not a mantra. It is an understanding that I am that, I am that. And once you abide in that and it becomes firm, so when somebody wakes you up in the morning, who are you? You should not say, I am Diana. You should say, I am that. I am that conscious. I mean, so just as when somebody says, are you a man or a woman, you don't have a doubt. You don't have to look in the mirror and say, this morning, am I a man or a woman? Or am I a human being or an animal? So similarly, you should have no doubt that I am that consciousness. That is firm abidance in that. Not that I have reached there, so don't think I am there yet. I am trying as much as you all are. But if you can get up in the morning and think that I am that self, and then slowly, by abidance, what we mean is start applying that in your daily life. That how would, suppose Jesus was here, how would he act in the world when you're faced with a problem? Or how would Krishna act? Or how would Swami Chinmayananda or, you know, Buddha, how would they deal with that? So, or, and then as you become more and more firm in that knowledge that I am this consciousness, then automatically you dissociate that I am not this body. This body is an instrument I have to function. I am not this mind. It is an instrument I have to feel the emotions. I am not the intellect. It is an instrument I have to think. And the more you detach, then slowly as the body deteriorates, as, like you said, the stock market even goes down or, you know, or some relationships break, you feel sorrow, but then you don't become so disheartened because then you have found this inner strength that I am this. It's just as my car breaks, you know, and it has a gets totaled. I feel bad, but then, you know, I go to the insurance company and get a new car and whatever, and then I go on with my life. So similarly, this body, even if I have to face death, even if somebody tells me, God forbid, I have cancer and that I have only 6 months to live, but if I am firm in that belief that I am that consciousness, then it's okay. You know, if the body I have to drop, it's all right, but nothing happens to me. So such a person becomes strong within regarding themselves. This is not a knowledge to be applied to anybody else. Like somebody's mother dies, you don't go and say, you know, she didn't die, you know, she's the infinite self. Not like that. Or that you are the self, you shouldn't be crying for your mother. Not like that. You know, for them you express love and emotion and sharing. But when it comes time for my own losses, it's not that I don't love somebody or I'm not sorrowful. But slowly, slowly, you become a little bit stronger within. So, you know, you don't depend on drugs for your happiness or depend on Prozac or depend on Elavil. You don't depend on somebody's praise or somebody's, because you become self-sufficient. So abidance in that knowledge is understanding that I am that consciousness who at this moment is playing this role. And just as an actor is playing a role in a movie and after the role is finished, you know, he leaves it and he says, okay, I'm over. Now I'm going to go and play another role in another movie. He doesn't get attached to that, though it happened to that actor who was playing the Joker. You know, what was it? Ledger, yeah. But generally, an actor drops the role and he moves on. So similarly, if I have this particular role of Anil or Carrie or whatever role, when it's over, it's fine. I'll go ahead and pick up a new role or, you know, whatever the maker wants. And depending on my vasanas and depending on my karmas, like the actor will say, depending on my talents, I'll get a new director who will give me a new role in a new movie. So similarly, depending on my desires, I'll get a new body and I'll continue my journey. So listening is good, then think about it and then start living it, so as he said, and applying that in your life. And the most important understanding that we get in our meditation is that I am that consciousness. Yes.
I have a little story. This class has really helped me recently. Dan and I were driving to Phoenix over the grapevine last week, and a policeman picked me up at 80 miles an hour. He said 65, but I decided that I wasn't my emotions, and I felt sorry for a little bit, but I let it go, and it didn't bother me because of this.
Good. That's very good, because that's a difficult experience. Just very quickly, we'll just quickly cover it, then we have to do the... They said there is nothing here as purifying as knowledge. Knowledge is the greatest purifier. It's said in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Shri Krishna says, that there is no greater purifier than knowledge. Why do we say that? Why is it said that there is no greater purifier than knowledge? Yes.
If you're not aware of something, how can you deal with it? knowledge is a grand purifier. If it's not the right knowledge, then you can make changes in knowledge.
Right. Right. Also, once you have the right knowledge, then only you can remove your negativities. So once you have the, what is my goal in life, what is my purpose in life, that you can get from a teacher or from reading the books, then once your path is clear, then any other obstacle in my path, I drop. And secondly, once I become aware of my negativities, then I can. So I think